Welcome to Women Who Sarcast. I'm Kathy Barron. My guest today is the founder, head educator, and cultivator at Fungi Freight's Urban Lab and Environmental Studio. She works as an environmental scientist and continues doing research with micromediation in Detroit. Through Fungi Freights, her goal is to educate Detroit and its surrounding neighbors about the benefits fungi have on health, food security, and the environment. Please welcome Tess Brzezinski.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. And I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing fungi correctly. Is there a correct pronunciation, or is it just like tomato, tomato kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty much tomato, tomato. I think, you know, different parts of the world pronounce it differently. So I think whatever you personally feel comfortable saying, you know, some people say fungi, you know, they think of the fun guy.
Right.
Fungi, I think you see it more or hear it more rather kind of in the science field. But yeah, tomato, tomato. Fungi.
Okay. I just want to be politically correct, you know. Don't want to offend anybody.
No need for any of that. You're good. The fungi don't care.
So I feel like the fungi are like hidden and like a forbidden gem of our forests. You know, it's like, how did you get interested in fungi?
Yeah, they're kind of the unsung heroes, I think, of our planet. And they have been understudied and overlooked for so long. So seeing them come into the limelight now is really, really awesome. I'm so happy. I mean, studying these organisms for about 10 years now, I'm like, ah, finally, you know, like people are waking up and really seeing these organisms for all of the fantastic, amazing things that they can do. And, you know, not only for the environment, but for environmental health, but personal health as well. I grew up with a Polish grandfather. We had a place in northern Michigan, and he was an avid mushroom hunter, loved the morels. So from a young age, I was foraging, but I still didn't really understand mushrooms for, you know, other than just, you know, having fun in the woods with my grandpa and, you know, eating these weird looking things. And right. At that age, I was like, I don't want to eat that morel. It like looks weird and it has all these holes in it. Like, right. Looks like a brain. It wasn't until, you know, coming into my like teenage years and feeling like out of place and awkward and trying to understand who I was and my purpose here. I, you know, had a psychedelic experience with psilocybin, and I really think I found myself and was able to accept myself for who I am and find that self-love and self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always a kind of a nerd, I would say, and very interested in science. It was always my favorite subject as a kid. So going on and studying microbiology in college, I brought like my love for, you know, psilocybin and that part into actually being able to study these organisms for, you know, how they interact in our environment. Mm-hmm. And the bigger purpose that they have. So,
right.
And then it just kind of,
like the magical world of fungi.
Absolutely. Yeah. It just, you know.
Do you know why? Like I watched the movie Fantastic Fungi. I don't know if you saw that or not, but it just was very fascinated by what everyone that was interviewed had to say and just the passion that the people had, whether it was the scientist or the guy that was like growing his own mushrooms, fungi, or foraging or whatever. It was just very interesting. And it also, one of the women, I think, it was saying that there's also this perspective or this view of fungi as like evil, or there's a lot of fear and uncertainty around fungi. I mean, like if you go to the grocery store, like with any fruit, people think, nobody knows where this stuff comes from a lot of times. It's like, yeah, it comes from mm-hmm. a farm, and there's people that, you know, grow it and pick it. And I kind of feel like, you know, crimini and white mushrooms are like it for a lot of people, and they don't really know anything else about the other varieties of fungi. So why do you feel like in the last, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years, it's kind of picked up as far as the popularity?
I totally understand what you're saying about that mycophobia. I think that was instilled a long, long time ago. I mean, we can talk about the spreading of Christianity and Catholicism. And at one point, you know, people were actually worshiping mushrooms. In kind of a godlike way. And I think with the spread of like organized religion, that was feared, you know,
interesting,
worshiping these mushroom gods and not, you know.
Damn, that was religion. So Christianity's right. ruining one more thing.
Really? Yeah. I could go into it, but maybe we'll do another
episode podcast about,
yeah, ethnomycology and that. But so there is a mycophobia. There was, you know, a thing with fear of mushrooms. And I think a lot of people also fear them in, you know, when it comes to gourmet mushrooms, because there's this whole thing about mushrooms being poisonous and, mm-hmm. and fearing them in that way. Well, there's plants that are poisonous too, right? It's just you have to be educated. And I think for a long time, there wasn't much education on mushrooms. It was just like, okay, we can't tell this one from that one. So just stay away from all of them.
Right. Right.
Kind of thing. So I think within the last, you know, few years, the gourmet and medicinal cultivation has grown and it is continuing to grow. So I think, you know, as more people start to grow these different types of gourmet mushrooms, they're more accepted mm-hmm. because and a lot of people will say, oh, I don't like mushrooms, they're gross, or, you know, they have a weird texture. But I think they've only really tried, you know, a portobello or like a button mushroom. So, mm-hmm. and they haven't been exposed to all of the other wonderful varieties of mushrooms. So it's great to see people opening that door to gourmet mushrooms and the different varieties.
Yeah. So I wanted to get some terms out of the way, like what is mycelium and how is it important for the environment?
Yeah. So mycelium is like the entire network of fungi. So it's great to bring up mycelium. It really is magical. It's tenacious. It's a beautiful structure. So mycelium is the root structure to a mushroom, mm-hmm. like a root to a plant. So, and I wanted to bring up this as well. When I say fungi or mushroom, like when we say fungi or when we say mushroom, and how to differentiate those terms is, all mushrooms are fungi, but not all fungi are mushrooms. Hmm. Okay. So the mushroom is the fruiting body. It's the part of the fungi that actually bears fruit. And then we'll have the spores to carry on that life cycle. So, you know, certain fungi like yeast and some molds like won't produce a fruiting body. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like an apple to a tree.
Okay. That's good to know because I was wondering about that.
So yeah, mycelium. It's super vast and it pretty much is the foundation for all life on Earth. It's for breaking down the bedrock, the very calcareous bedrock in very early stages of Earth, in creating that soil that terrestrial life could then utilize and grow in. So without mycelium, we wouldn't have this rich, viable soil for terrestrial life to, you know,
right.
begin into. So I do like to bring up the point that it's ancient and a foundation, the grand foundation of all life on Earth.
That's pretty heavy. It's pretty deep.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about, and some people probably call like bullshit or something, but I mean, if you, I don't think they've ever thought about it that far back and how, right, you know, soil was even created, or, you know, the beginning of all of that. People just think, oh, things came out of the water and that was it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, people don't really think beyond a lot of things, but I feel like the, yeah, from what I saw on the documentary, the mycelium is kind of like a internet network, is, I guess you could describe it as that. It's like almost like a cobweb of sorts where it just runs through the veins of the earth, basically.
Yes, and it's a great connector. I mean, it connects so many different species, and it's great for nutrient transportation, communication, cell communication underneath the ground, and you know, everything that we see that's growing like on top of the soil has an entire network underground that I think we forget about because, you know, out of sight, out of mind, but right, there's so much going on beneath our feet, beneath, you know, our eyes. So, you know, you can imagine it. And then it's really kind of fascinating the next time you go like outside and walking in the forest or the woods and kind of just like remember that in your head, that like this, there's a whole entire network and vast communication happening just beneath our feet. And it is responsible for so much that we take granted.
Yeah. I was out in the Sierra Mountains. I don't know if you've been in, I'm in California, but I don't know if you've been out here before in the Sierras. And it was kind of like a misty, rainy day. And it was definitely a lot of, I don't think it was a rainforest, but it's definitely moist. And just hiking along the trail, there were all these really cool mushrooms and the different colors. And it was just amazing.
They're so mystical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when you start to really recognize them, and even if it's just for, you know, if you're not, you know, foraging them, if it's just to appreciate, like with your eyes, like they are so diverse and they just look so fairy tale, storybook. And
right.
Once you start all the fairies around them, it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mythical. It kind of can take you away from the everyday rush of life.
Yeah. And it's amazing where they pop up sometimes, you know, where they, they push, you know, the effort that it takes for them to push through, like the pine needles or the, you know, twigs or whatever's on top of the soil. So.
Right. And you wouldn't think that sometimes that they're that strong because they can be so brittle. I mean, you can pick them up and just squish them. They're actually made up of, their cell wall is comprised of chitin. So it's, so they don't photosynthesize like plants because they don't have cellulose, but so they're actually heterotrophs. They have to obtain their nutrients from an outside source, but their cell wall is comprised of chitin, giving it that hardier structure. Chitin is what crustaceans and arthropods are comprised of. So that outer, harder layer. So that's just an interesting thought when you see like how powerful they can be.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me about fungi freights.
Yeah, we can dive into that whole project.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more. What's going on in Detroit?
Detroit, that's where I'm based. I love Detroit. Been here a long time, all my life. Mm-hmm. I was raised in the outskirts, but my mother was born and raised in Detroit. So I've been coming here, you know, since I was a kid. And I've been living here for the past 8 years now. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Detroit and its community and the inner city. So Fungi Freights is a 7-parcel lot that I got. So it's just about a half an acre of consecutive lots that were vacant that I acquired through a land-based project proposal that I wrote to the land bank, and that was accepted. And I moved on with creating that vacant property to be a green space for people of the community to grow and learn about the natural sciences and kind of have a place to go where it can kind of feel like I would say like a sanctuary, kind of oasis within nature, within that inner city community. Mm-hmm. I feel that everybody deserves the right to have that type of space and somewhere to go to expand their knowledge in the sciences and have the equipment to do so. So our freight container is equipped as a community lab space. So it's not yet open to the community. We have a few more things to do before it's ready to actually be open for community usage. But we will provide that type of laboratory space for the community to engage and learn more about anywhere from mycology to botany to environmental and, you know, environmental justice and just environmental health overall. We do a lot of work with soil. I am a soil scientist. So just, you know, offering my skills to the community to learn more about their surroundings.
That's amazing. And are you like one of the few in the country that, as far as using a freight?
So I would say using a freight container, shipping container as a lab space, I would be one of the few. I haven't really seen anything. I think there's a lot of projects starting up with people using a shipping container for, you know, growing greens and growing vegetables and certain things like that, which is really great. Great to see. But my plan more so with Fungi Freights is to equip these containers with everything that is necessary and needed to grow your own mushrooms for medicinal and gourmet purposes. So for food security and just overall personal health, and drop them in different communities where they are affected heavily by food insecurity or poverty or, you know, marginalized communities. So working with these types of communities, equipping the freight container and giving them the knowledge, you know, to take over, you know, eventually and utilize it for their own health and economic opportunity. So we have a few places that we are engaging with to, you know, begin that process when the time comes. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. And like you said, the shipping containers are used for houses, and I'm guessing it's good for greenhouse kind of thing if you're growing plants, and mushrooms need a dark, cool place, right, to grow. Is that normally typically how they're grown?
Yeah, so they don't need a lot of light. They do need some light because they're phototaxic. So they actually don't need light as energy, but they do need light as a directional source. Mm-hmm. So to know what direction to grow.
I see.
Okay. If they didn't have that light source above them, they would just kind of grow. They would just start, you know, trying to grow out from any which way. Mm-hmm. So that's how they do utilize the light source. But for the most part, you know, little light is okay.
So the Fungi Freights, do you have like workshops and seminars that people can, like the community can attend to learn more about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a big part of what we do. You know, we try to have as many workshops as we can, weather permitting, obviously, and COVID, you know, during COVID, we just kind of utilize that time to really get the space set up where we want it, you know, to be, and which worked out pretty well, because I don't think we would have been ready for educational courses just yet, you know, before creating that nice welcoming space. Yeah, like beginner cultivation, we do a lot of work with outdoor cultivation as well, just simply teaching people how they can implement mushrooms into their backyard garden.
Right.
So,
yeah. So as an environmental scientist, what has the most damaging impact on our environment, and how do fungi help heal that, the environment?
Oh, I would say humans, anthropogenic.
You know, besides the obvious.
I think we are like a big old parasite, just living, sucking life out of Earth. But I mean, that there's a lot of things that affect our environment. I think a lot of the things that we use, of course, carbon, you know, a lot of the greenhouse gases, and methane's a huge one. I mean, just from the biggest source of methane would be coming from cows,
right?
Pasture farming and, you know, over farming and, you know, poor agricultural practices is like what I think is the most harmful right now on our planet, because it is so destructive to our soil. We're turning vital, rich soils into pretty much deserts. And I think we could turn a lot of that around if we just become more sustainable with our cultivation and farming practices.
Is that where the mycorrhizal remediation comes in?
So mycorrhizal remediation is wonderful. It's, you know, not fully adopted as a bioremediation tactic yet, but, you know, the idea of it, and the idea of it is something great to consider. So how mycorrhizal remediation works is implementing specific strains of fungi into the soil, into a contaminated soil. And I do want to say mostly for petroleum-based contamination, your hydrocarbons. And because fungi, I was explaining earlier, are heterotrophs, meaning they have to obtain their nutrients from an outside source. Mm-hmm. They do this by excreting enzymes outside of their self through their mycelial hyphae. They will excrete enzymes, and those enzymes will break down, you know, polymers into monomers, and then the fungi can reabsorb those nutrients back through its mycelium or hyphal tip. So the fascinating thing about this is saprophytic mushrooms, those are mushrooms that break down dead organic matter. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would break it down first that mushrooms obtain nutrients in three different ways. There are parasitic mushrooms. They live off of a host. There's mutualistic fungi. Those fungi form, you know, a symbiotic relationship with another organism. And there's saprophytic fungi. And saprophytic fungi break down, they obtain nutrients from dead organic matter. So they are our decomposers. They break down these organic nutrients and make them in, you know, they can utilize them as a nutrient source. So they are responsible for about 90% of decomposition on Earth. So they're super important for the nutrient cycle and just for, you know, getting rid of all of the leaf litter and dead, you know, debris. So as they break down this dead organic matter, a big part of it is breaking down not only cellulose, but lignin. And lignin is what woody trees and shrubs are comprised of. Mm-hmm. Gives them that hard outside layer, like bark, or it forms that really tough structure. So lignin, its molecular structure is aromatic. So fungi have been breaking lignin down for millions of years. And then you take a hydrocarbon, which is also, its molecular structure is also aromatic. It's an aromatic ring. They're also known as polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs. The fungi have an extracellular enzyme system that recognizes those aromatic hydrocarbons and can begin to break them down. So there have been studies using these fungi to remediate some petroleum contamination like that.
Which, like oil spills or something like that. Yeah.
Right, right.
So is that like the future of fungi? Is the future is fungi? It's not female, it's fungi?
Female and fungi, I'd say. Absolutely. And, you know, the remedial part of, you know, is just one aspect of the future of them. I mean, they are going to be, I think, utilized in so many different ways, but all of them being beneficial, whether it's for, you know, personal health and development, environmental health, and you know, just as a you know, groundbreaking study, just having something that you can feel excited to study because you can discover something that no one has ever discovered before. I think with a lot of different areas of study, it seems almost like everything's kind of been figured out, or just it takes a lot more to discover something brand new. With fungi, I think because of it being, you know, them being understudied for so long, there's so much that we can look forward to.
Yeah. And I feel like just from watching the documentary that there's a lot more non-scientists that are kind of getting into the fungi and growing certain, you know, species of fungi for medicinal and environmental purposes. So how can like the average Joe, like me, bring fungi more into their lives to kind of help with the environment and to as far as food, health, and that sort of thing?
Sure. I mean, there's so many different ways to bring fungi closer to you and, you know, closer to your, you know, everyday existence. I think it would just depend on what you prefer and what you find the most fulfilling in your life. You know, I think some people foraging, they already like to be in the outdoors. I think just keeping your eyes peeled and the next time you go take a walk, you know, consider fungi and keep an eye for them. And, you know, you might learn something new about your area, even something new about yourself, just by, you know, keeping them in mind, you know, when you're going out for a walk. And and I think it is a really satisfying hobby because once you get better at it, it's so rewarding to be able to go out into the woods and pick a mushroom and then like successfully identify or just challenge yourself to bring it back and like identify it and advance your identification skills so much to where the next time or the next couple of times you can forage for your own medicinal or gourmet mushrooms and bringing, you know, a plethora of, you know, chicken of the woods or morels back home to your kitchen and preparing a delicious meal. It's something so, so wonderful. And it's just, you know, going from, you know, bringing it back, like foraging yourself and then bringing it back. And it hits home a lot differently. It hits your palate.
Right. A lot. I mean, it's like fresh from the ground.
Yeah. Right? It's amazing.
Yeah.
And within your personal lives and for health purposes, I think too, just expand like your palate with fungi, increasing them more into your diet. I think grocery stores are getting better at, like you were saying, bringing in those different species, you know, to eat. So maybe just trying them out. I mean, they're loaded with nutrients and very protein heavy too. So for vegetarians out there, they're a great supplement for meat. Mm-hmm. And maybe doing some research on like some of the medicinal mushrooms out there and just implementing those into your daily vitamin regime. Mm-hmm. There are some good sources out there and maybe we can talk about that. And for environmental purposes, I think growing your own mushrooms is great. And the waste that you get from it, you know, you can just compost that and mm-hmm. enhancing the mycelial content in your garden, even if mushrooms don't grow for it, is going to be beneficial for the soil. It's going to be beneficial for your garden.
Right. Yeah. And I think watching that documentary, Fantastic Fungi, is definitely a step too. If you know, listeners haven't done that yet. It kind of gets you over that little hump of those preconceived ideas of what fungi is. Because that documentary just blew me away as far as how powerful the fungi seem to be and just the vast uses of it as well. So,
absolutely. I think that documentary does a great job of explaining fungi for what they are and what they can be. So that's definitely a good point to watch that. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, or they learned so much and didn't know. And I'm like, oh, no wonder. Yeah, you've been obsessed with fungi for
Exactly. Isn't that how trends happen, right?
Right. Like, I was just the weird mushroom girl forever.
Right. Now it's becoming now people, trendy and hip to be a forager, I guess. But I guess, you know, with everything, it seems like that's the steps it takes to become more popular, and even though you've known it for years.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm so happy that they're getting the credit and visibility and, you know, that they deserve. It's great. It doesn't matter how you found out about fungi. I'm just glad that you are, you know,
expanding our horizons.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I think listeners should definitely check out your website and follow you on social media to learn more. And especially if they're in your area to, you know, check it out as far as when the freight's ready to have the workshops and that sort of thing. So I'm very excited and thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This was wonderful. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Sarcast, an independent podcast. Email us at womenwhosarcast@yahoo.com and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Women Who Sarcast. Get your copy of Women Who Podcast magazine today. Visit womenwhopodcastmag.com to subscribe. Show music provided by Mike Imbasciani.